Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and of course we have many visitors over the decades who are part of our programming and always welcome for our St. Patrick's Day program and our St. Patrick's season. One such guest, I think if you take the last three decades, would you believe it or not, Ireland's, to say that she is Ireland's Julia Child, as chronicled by the San Francisco Chronicle itself, would be putting it mildly. An internationally renowned Ballymaloe cookery school in Shangari, in County Cork, a friend of ours, and somebody who's with us every year. First of all, you're very welcome, Darina.
Thank you. It's great to be back on your show again.
Look, big anniversary, big new milestone.
Yeah.
For the Darina Allen.
Well, we have lots of celebrations at Ballymaloe this year. Actually, just on Tuesday night, my mother-in-law, Myrtle Allen, who opened Ballymaloe House, celebrated her 90th birthday, and then Ballymaloe House and the inn, as you would call it over here, we call it Country House Hotel, is celebrating 50 years in operation, and the Ballymaloe Cookery School is celebrating 30 years. So lots of celebrations this year.
Well, congratulations, and especially, of course, to the founder, to the mammy who made all of this happen, and
absolutely,
and who. Indeed, decided that, whereas Ireland was always traditionally known for home cooking and for growing their own vegetables and indeed having all of those traditional skills, they were never put together. It took Myrtle, to say, wait a minute, let us not lose traditions, let us smarten those up, and I guess that's what you've been doing.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, Myrtle always knew how good Irish produce was. And, if you want to do absolutely delicious, yummy, nourishing, gorgeous food, you must start with good ingredients. And in Ireland, I don't have to tell you, Adrian, how blessed we are by nature in terms of growing conditions and everything. We've got a very high percentage of fertile soil. We've got that wonderful miles and miles of coastline with really good fish and shellfish.
Right.
And now in the last number of, the last 20 or 30 years, of course, there's been an incredible renaissance on the Irish food scene. And really, the image of Ireland as a country where you just have corned beef and cabbage and bacon and cabbage and soda and everything, delicious as they are, absolutely doesn't reflect what's happening on the food scene in Ireland at the moment, with all the wonderful cheeses and meats and, so much and cured meats and artisan foods and all of that. So, you come back with the forward around all the fancy, but gosh, it's taking a long time for people to realize in many ways that when they come to Ireland, it's not just for the scenery now and for the lovely, welcome and the friendly people, but you can go right around the country and get a taste of every region, a taste of that place. And so many people say to me in incredulous tones, oh, my God, I had no idea that the food would be so good. So this book, The 30 Years at Ballymaloe, reflects the sort of food that's being cooked in Ireland at the moment and the pride we have and confidence that we have in the quality of our own ingredients. And then you have the young chefs and they have the skills to make them into something totally memorable on the plate now.
Yeah, and we should also point out, of course, that, your program, television program, Simply Delicious in Ireland also made it easier for the island of Ireland to say, yeah, we can do that. So, you know, the influence of Ballymaloe can be, you know, can really be very evident, you know, in the remote corners or the biggest cities. And you've managed somehow to spread that word around the world, but particularly in America.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that, of course, Ballymaloe House and the Cookery School are in the middle of a farm very close to the sea in East Cork near Ballycotton there. And so they always what was served at Ballymaloe and still is the food at the farm and gardens and the local area and the lovely fish, fresh fish from Ballycotton. And everything came, you know, we hadn't got the term for it when Ballymaloe was started 50 years ago, but it was the way we were was totally from farm to fork. You know, it was the food from the garden
right.
to the farm. And then, you know, buying from the local butcher and artisan producer in the area. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing. And, of course, the food was predominantly local, apart from spices and things, of course, that we bought in and citrus and everything. But this is now, I mean, you know, this is, of course, whatever it is, 50 years later, this is what all the chefs and cooks are talking about, you know, having the local and fresh and seasonal and all that. So, you know, Myrtle, she didn't realize that she was starting a quiet revolution in her own way. It was just the way we were. And now, you know, students
yeah.
literally come from all over the world. I think there are 9 nationalities at the Ballymaloe Cookery School at the moment, and on the last 12-week course, actually, there were 14 nationalities. And they come, why do they come? They come because the cookery school is in the middle of a farm and gardens, and they know they're going to be able to see how food is produced right literally from the farm. They can learn how to make cheese and butter and yogurt and, you know, smoke their own food and all of that. So they learn absolutely from scratch, and that's another great term now, of course, as well, you know, about chefs boast about doing everything from scratch rather than just slitting the top of a packet. So, again, it's sort of the way we always were, but as my mother-in-law always jokes, if you live long enough, you know, it's surprising how fashion comes around to you at the end. But she just, that's what she did because that's what she knew and that's what she believed in. But in Ireland now, I think also everybody's got so much more confidence. It took us a long time to realize really what we had under our own noses, the quality of our produce. And as you well know, many of our best foods come from our grass, our beef and our lamb and our dairy products. And, you know, obviously the butter, the Kerrygold butter you can get over here and have been able to
sure.
For a number of years now. And then also the more recently, the Ballymaloe country relish is also available over here in ketchup. So that's actually, there was a survey done recently where you know, when you're away from home, you often mm-hmm. long for the foods you had at home. And the thing that people wanted their mammy or whatever to bring out to them most was the Ballymaloe relish. No, actually, it was the third thing. Barry's tea and a couple of others were before it.
Right.
But, so anyway, that's available over here now, which is nice.
And, of course, a tremendous awareness. And again, Ballymaloe brought it to our attention. It was almost a hidden secret. If people had, you know, a need for gluten-free eating, they kind of kept it rather quiet because somehow that indicated much, you know, there was something wrong with you. That has, and Ballymaloe has actually brought attention to that, so that, you know, so that it's out in the open, it is there.
Oh, well, yes, of course, and I mean now more and more people have food intolerances and food allergies, so you know, we have to be really aware of that and encourage them to, you know, to go back and find fresh, naturally produced local food as best as they can. Celiac is, of course, a disease, so that's if you can't tolerate gluten, that's it. It's not a question of trying a different kind of flour. But this is part of, you know, the reality nowadays. But for we've been doing, I think, for about 20 years, we've been doing a course for healthy gluten-free eating. But more recently, we've done a course on fermenting. There's a huge revival of interest in fermentation and a lot of those forgotten skills. And also I've been doing cooking for babies and toddlers. A lot of the young mums nowadays are very confused with all the you know, conflicting marketing messages about, and they're obviously incredibly busy and really anxious to feed their children healthy food, but not always knowing how to go about it. So that's another one. And actually, the whole truck food revival is another thing that we've been very interested in. So I'm going to do a truck food course at the school this year as well, and as well as the, you know, the forgotten skills and the gardening courses. But so there's lots of variety. And if people are in Ireland, they can always come in just for an afternoon cookery class or for a day or weekend. And we actually, if they're coming with a group, we've had great fun doing special classes, you know, putting special packages together for groups of cooking and cooking together, and then going down onto the farm and gardens, learning how to sow a seed, all kinds of things, making some cheese or yogurt in the little dairy, because we have 7 Jersey cows now. I'm getting to be quite a big dairy farmer, Adrian.
How about that?
We've got wonderful milk and Jersey cream to put on your
and
Irish
Jersey
oatmeal.
Cream. Now, when Ireland indeed has garnered a reputation of home growing some of the finest chefs in the world.
Yeah, totally.
And many of them, in our own interviews and in our own archives, you know, would not forget to slip in there somewhere. That they have spent that some of their training that came from Ballymaloe, and there, and when you go around Ireland, you don't have to. You know, this is not a marketing program for Ballymaloe, but the evidence of Ballymaloe and Ballymaloe cookery is evident throughout the island of Ireland.
Oh, well, Adrian, you're very nice to say that. But, I mean, we have, and we're very proud of our babies, as we say. Well, the school has been operating for over 30 years now. So, of course, lots and lots of the past students are making considerable mark, not just in Ireland, but literally all over the world. I was
Absolutely.
In India a couple of weeks ago there, and our, we've been getting some students from India too. And our first Indian student has started a hugely successful restaurant in Mumbai, and another one has started a catering business. So literally, they're popping up all over the place. But actually, I don't know whether probably the most exciting thing, new thing we've been doing since we chatted about it last, was last year for the first time we did a Ballymaloe Literary Festival of food and wine. Food and wine, yes. We don't make the wine. But basically, there are literary festivals all over the world. There are food festivals and wine festivals, of course. But amazingly, nobody had done a literary festival of food and wine. So when we thought of doing a literary festival, that seemed the obvious thing. And we did it over the Maybank Holiday weekend, and we had nearly 40 speakers, some of the top iconic food and wine people from over the world. Claudia Roden, Marjorie Jeffrey, David Thompson, Stephanie Alexander came in from Australia. And incredible lineup. And it just went into orbit. We were hoping for 2,500 to 3,000 people. We had over 8,000 people over the weekend. And there was a whole big Ballymaloe Fringe literary festival as well. And, you know, something for budding young writers and a farmer's market and craft beers. And, oh, it was such a blast. And this year,
I want to stop you right there, because the farmer's market and that concept indeed were a bit slow to spread into major cities here like New York. But your farmer's market, that has been, if not to the fore, that has been, a creation of, the Ballymaloe principles.
Well, basically, of all the bits and pieces I've been involved in over the years, probably the thing I'm most proud of, if you like to say, not that I think of it that much, but basically is the fact that I restarted the markets in Ireland, the farmers'
right.
markets. That was about 20-something years ago, after I'd seen the first farmers' market that I saw over here in America in San Francisco in a parking lot. Well, now it's in the Ferry Plaza building
right.
in San Francisco, but at that stage it was in a parking lot. And I got terribly excited about this, because at that time in Ireland, the supermarkets were going over to a central distribution system. So the local shops that were owned by the supermarkets literally were no longer allowed to buy local food. And, you know, you'd have local people growing potatoes and carrots,
yes,
and various things and bringing them in and selling them in the local shop. And suddenly they went into the local shop and they were told that they couldn't buy them from them anymore. So suddenly local farmers couldn't sell to local shops and local people couldn't get local food. So that was the sort of background when I came to San Francisco and suddenly saw this market, and I thought it was like a light bulb going on.
Yes.
I thought, my goodness, we must get the farmers market started again.
Well, as we've discussed,
I started the first one in the Cold Quay in Cork
20-something
years ago. Now there are over 160 farmers markets in Ireland. And many of the farmers would say that they wouldn't be still on the land if it wasn't for the farmers markets, because particularly small farmers really need to get the full price for their produce, small food producers. And, of course, then local people can get local food in season. And the money stays in the community and all of that, which is a really good thing.
We've discussed many times before, indeed, in my growing up, the farmers market would be tied in with the fairs and the pig markets.
Yes.
And of course they're
quite different now, sort of very, and that's why in some ways, Adrian, that was one of the reasons why it was so hard to get it going in the beginning, because for a lot of people, selling in Ireland, because of our history, it was anathema to set up a stall on the side of the street again and sell off that. People thought, my God, you'd want to be on your knees. But, you know, it took me a while to convince people that this was the way forward for some people, not for everybody,
mm-hmm,
and that it was a great fun, very sophisticated way to sell food. And so, but now people love the farmers markets, support them enormously. And interestingly, during our challenging economic times in Ireland, the markets continued to do well. And, you know, there's a real bond of trust between the customers and the producers. And you meet the person who's grown your food or caught your fish or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And there is, for very good reason, a great sense of pride. And those who are, you know, in some of the finest restaurants in Ireland, not only do they say that this is artisan food, but they also, in many cases, identify the butchers. They
absolutely, yeah.
And it becomes kind of a brand in itself.
Yes, this is really, Adrian, part of us growing in confidence and realizing, wow, you know, what we have in our own parishes, in our own area, and really serving it proudly on our menus. And that, you know, it took a long time coming for such a long time, particularly when I was a child, local was considered to be a derogatory term. And we thought, you know, it took us a long time to realize what, you know, the riches that we had and to be really served them proudly.
And, of course, the, you know, the European Union and the development in Ireland's, you know, membership in the European Union gave a very tough period there. And I distinctly remember we've discussed it, you know, 20 years ago in Foxford, in my home county of Mayo, going in, you know, to get the bacon, the boiling bacon. And the Irish bacon would be maybe 20% more than bacon from throughout Europe.
Yes.
It was one of the hardest things to figure. I mean, God knows if we can't, our potatoes, you know, our cabbage.
Our lovely floury potatoes, yeah.
You know, if we had to pay more, something had gone wrong there, and many would say, oh, well, yes, but we, you know, we want to become part of the European Union. We did that, and we had no choice but to do that. Well, boy, did that take a story from the past.
All on its own, indeed.
You know, because now people do know how significant and how important it is to, you know, to get the homegrown local food, you know, meat, vegetables from a very reliable source. And as
absolutely,
I say, there is nothing in it either for the restaurant or for the butcher shop or indeed for anybody who is promoting the artisan foods to even make a slight slip in that kind of service, because everybody's reputation is on the line.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, well, the artisans, you know, the cheesemakers and all of that, it's their livelihood. It's they're passionate about their product. And so, particularly as, you know, one new food scandal after the other happens internationally, people really are becoming more and more aware of how some of our food's being produced. And so they're going back, they're looking, desperately craving food they can trust. And certainly we have that in Ireland in spades. And there's so much of the food we export, a lot of food, of course. We have an ability to, it's something we feed something like 24, produce enough food for about 24 million people. But basically the food, so much of that food, the butter and the beef and all of that, it's produced on small family farms in Ireland.
Yep.
And as people become more and more distrustful in some ways of the very big multinational food companies and so on, this trust, people are becoming a little bit more and more concerned about that. Well, then to know that a lot of the food comes from small family farms in Ireland is a tremendous
and also that it's not riddled with preservatives.
Absolutely. Food they can trust. That's what people are really craving. Mm-hmm. And that's what Ireland, our little food island, can certainly produce in spades.
My guest, friends, Doreena Allen, holds many positions in leading food organizations, in the UK and in Ireland, a member of the Taste Council of Irish Food Board, chair of Artisan Food Forum and Food Safety Authority of Ireland, trustee of Irish Organic Centre, patron of Irish Seed Savers.
Gosh, it's a long list.
Yeah.
Before we finish, Adrian, I must tell you the dates of the Ballymaloe Literary Festival of Food and Wine for this year. It's the 16th to the 18th of May. So if you're over, we'd love to see you. And we plan to make this the Sundance of Food and Wine Festivals.
That is terrific. And, of course, I'd also like to leave you with one question, as I think almost every cookbook that you've had has been launched right here in New York and many of them on my own program here. So here is a recurring question.
Mm-hmm.
Book number 10. These are new recipes.
Yes, absolutely, totally.
This is not the best of, taking recipes from the first 9 books. Actually, that's a bit puzzling, to many people to say, I don't need this book because I have the others. And I started bogging down at book number 4 or something else like that. I have very limited culinary skills. So now, there's a plus and a minus in this. Somebody would say, well, maybe if I get this new book, which is, must be the best of, this is Doreena Allen pulling out from her own cookery book, the best of. Maybe this is an opportunity for people, who think that they've been there, they've done that. Obviously, they haven't.
Well, the thing about this one, Adrian, is that it reflects the sort of food we're cooking at Ballymaloe and the school at the moment. We've always had a huge respect for the traditions and all of that, but we travel a lot. The food is very contemporary, using the beautiful ingredients that we have in season. I mean, I've just opened the page here at the rose blossom panna cotta with crystallized rose petals. Well, we just crystallized the little petals from the roses in the garden in the summer. There are also the cheeses, how to make sourdough breads and all kinds of things. But also there's a carrageen moss pudding in there, which certainly will have done before. But this time we flavored it with sweet geranium and served it with poached apricots. So,
well, for me,
just lovely.
Yeah. For me, a flavored carrageen moss comes about at least 60, nearly 70 years too late, because
come on, I've got to convert you to it next time you come over.
No, we had at Cargain Moss, in as we were growing up, this was a must. This was a staple. This was something that was served strictly and purely for health reasons. It was like a medicine. And in hindsight, it kind of tasted like that as well.
Yeah, a lot of the time, as you know, carrageen, we've the little seaweed. Carrageen means little rock in Gaelic. And it's a natural gelatin used a lot in food manufacturing, actually.
Yeah.
But it's if you put too much in, it's like India rubber.
Oh, I know.
And so I have to, next time you come over to Ireland, Adrian, I'll make you some carrageen light and fluffy from my mother-in-law, Myrtle Allen's recipe. Actually, I really think it's the best of the whole lot of them. But no wonder you're looking so well with all that carrageen you ate.
Oh, my God, are you kidding? Between carrageen and Parrish's food and the, all of the, oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness, we're giving away our age at this stage.
You have to remember that an expression that we all grew up with is, you look fine and stout. My God.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, as always, Doreena, you've come each and every year and are trotted out by Tourism Ireland, because I think you're actually an icon for Ireland, for food, and somewhere along the way, you're here, and you definitely belong here in the season that's in it.
Adrian, thank you very much. But I've been passionate about Irish food, and I'm sort of desperate to change the image of Irish food from the sort of standard one of just corned beef and cabbage, great as it is.
I'm inviting
everybody to come over to Ireland and get a taste of everything we have.
Let's find out on your
website, is it?
Your website, exactly.
Okay. So that's www.cookingisfun.ie. And then the Ballymaloe website is www.ballymaloe.ie. So you can find out, what's on the menu, and you can find out what courses are at the cooking school from those. And then if anybody wants to find out about the Litfest, it's literally www.litfest.ie. And that is such a blast, a brilliant event. And Renu Ezepi of Noma in Copenhagen and the Ottolenghi boys, and all of those are coming this year.
Fantastic, and it's been my pleasure through the years, and indeed through the 30 years, to have gotten to know and interview Myrtle, and happy 90th birthday to Myrtle, and of course to yourself, and to your daughter-in-law, Rachel.
Of course, yes.
Is she in the kitchen these days?
She is, but that's when she's not filming and doing her books. But she teaches at the Ballymaloe Cookery School as well. And you see, the tradition continues, whereas I married the eldest son, Myrtle's eldest son, she married my eldest son, Isaac. So the tradition endures going down through the female line like that.
All in the family.
All in the family, that's right.
Paul, you are very welcome and very much a part of what Ireland's best has to offer during this St. Patrick's season. Again, Doreena Allen, somebody I've known as a friend. And by the way, I am going to take you up on that. If I have to make a special trip to go to Ballymaloe to have you make carrageen, from the carrageen moss that tastes absolutely fantastic, I'm going to put that on my bucket list right now.
Oh, well done. And so I'll make you eat your words about carrageen.
Okay, thank you. And a very happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Thank you for having me on, as usual.